You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Do we have free will? With Ankar Gatte and Dave Rubin.
We have done a whole bunch of these, and we're going to do some more of these, but this is our first one-on-one. Free will is one of your wheelhouse topics, and it's one of the topics that's hot amongst my intellectual dark web crew. So free will, take it away.
So I think to get what the basic issue is, it's free will versus determinism. And it's easier to get the determinist viewpoint, I think, first.
Okay.
The determinist viewpoint is that we and everything else in the universe is like clockwork. So you can look backward at antecedent, so prior factors, and say, given what those are, given the conditions, this is what will result, and then this is what will result, and then this is what will result. And it's all determined. So it's a line that has no deviations. There's no possibilities of anything else happening. Mm-hmm. And the free will position is that, at least when we're talking about human beings, this is not true of human beings. So when you think of them and you're trying to understand sort of cause and effect about human beings, you can't look just at antecedent factors and say, given this is his environment, this is his genetic makeup, this is what he has to do, will do, we can predict it beforehand, and it's one straight line. But why think that someone has free will? And why do you experience yourself as having free will? I think the basic phenomenon is choice. It's the fact that you make choices. And if you take seriously that it's a choice, it means you're selecting between things. You're selecting between alternatives, mm-hmm. none of which are dictated. So by the prior circumstances, I'm doing the selecting. And if I select the A, I'm going to go off in that direction. If I select B, I go this way. If I select C, I go. So thinking of it in terms of like paths or forks in the roads, there's literally forks in the roads that you can take one or the other.
So to give the deterministic point of view the credit it deserves, let's say, or to give the devil his due, I know that I have a choice right now. I could throw this glass of water in your face or not. Now, we're both pretty sure that I'm not going to do it. The person that believes in the deterministic point of view would make the argument that the reason I'm not going to do it is because of all the prior stuff that has happened to me, that we know that I'm just not going to do it, basically. Now, I guess I could do it, and that would cause a real problem for them, but then they would argue, well, then the stuff that happened before all led me to being the type of person that would do it.
Yeah.
You would say that is sort of irrelevant, that it's... Right? Like, well, it's basically up to this moment and choice. The choice is here, here and now.
I don't think it's completely irrelevant because I think it's not that your environment and your genes and your prior choices and what you've made of yourself aren't relevant to what you're going to do now and what you're going to choose now. So I don't think choice is magic. Sort of, it's you've got all these kind of random choices before you. You could throw the water in my face. You could stab a pen in my neck. You could list on and on, like all kinds of things.
Yeah, most violent choices, which is interesting.
Most of which, but here's the reason to bring it up like that. Most of which I don't think you're going to do. And not even like there's some slim possibility that is. But that's because of who you are. If I was sitting beside a guy convicted of murder, and so I might be wondering about that. Or if I'm Islamist,
right.
And I'm very critical of the whole Islamic movement and so on. If I'm faced that, I would be worried about that. But in neither case do I think it's determined. So you have choices that come from your background, including what you think and what you value. And we're trying to have a conversation, so I'm not expecting you to throw water in my face.
Right.
If, for instance, somebody was threatening you, and I don't know about that, and it's in the back, and if you don't do this, they're going to harm your child or something, and you might do it, but that's very different circumstances. But so a person's character, I think, is part of when thinking of the choices they're going to make, you have to think, what is their character? Which comes, I think, ultimately in significant part from prior choices.
Mm-hmm.
But that you have control over your character viewed long term, And that puts constraints on what you're going to choose. So you might not be choosing, are you going to throw water in my face or not? But you're thinking about ideas. I could take the conversation in this direction or that direction. I could ask this as the next question or this. And that I do think you have to choose. And it's not dictated by the prior circumstances. The reason one happens or the other happens, you ask question A or question B, is because you thought about it and decided, oh, no, I'm asking question B. And that's a choice that you're making, that it's not the prior factors, the antecedent factors, and so on. And it's a really important issue. I think it's important. Like, it's not just some academic talk about, well, are we free? Do we have
free will? So that actually was my next question.
Okay.
So you just, you just did, you took my choice from me. That actually was, that's exactly what my next question was, which is, so I know that a certain set of people like having the academic discussion about it. I happen to be one of those people. Uh-huh. But I think sometimes, and I see this in the comment section sometimes, people say, why does this really matter? We're all living, whether, regardless of which one is true, we're all living our lives, and this machine is moving forward either way. So why does it matter outside of the purely academic?
Yeah, I think it matters a lot for one's own conception of oneself and how one lives one's life, and then how you view other people and how you relate to other people. But take the first part first about thinking of oneself. Think of Martin Luther King's, I hope that my children grow up in a world or in a country where they're judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Why is he hoping for that? Why is it bad to judge people by the color of their skin? Why is he hoping that his children be judged by the content of their character? Your color of the skin is not up to them. They don't have any choice about this. They don't have any control over it. The content of the character, they do. Mm-hmm. And you want them judged based on the choices they're making. But the perspective one should have on oneself is, the content of my character is up to me. And it's not like I can snap my fingers and decide I'm going to be a totally different person. But you can make choices in the day-to-day of your life that's taking you in this direction or that's taking you in that direction. If I want to be a more productive person, I can't just snap my fingers and say, I want to do that. But I can think, and why are you interested in knowledge and advice and stuff? It's, oh yeah, I could make a different choice about maybe if I carve out, I want to write a book. If I carve out more time in the mornings before the whole day gets going and so on, and I'm going to commit that I'm doing an hour a day. It's, you view that as, yeah, that's under my choice. And so it maybe not, can I write a book or not? Is, I can't just decide, okay, I'm choosing that and everything is just going to unfold like that. But in your day-to-day life, there's all kinds of things that you can make choices about that I think are direct choices, so that you have control. And when we think about the person's character, you think of it as creating over time. And if you think of a child growing up into an adult, it's the choices they made over a long period of time that you think of, this is a good character, this is a person I respect, this is a person I would want to hire, and so on. Or this person is a shady character. And so it's a result of the choices. And if you really viewed yourself as not having these kinds of choices, then you don't think of it as, like, these are the possibilities in my life. Which am I going after and why? Mm-hmm. And that, like, what does self-responsibility mean if you don't have choices?
So would the simplest way to put this be that this is what separates us from the animals, basically?
I think it's...
Is that a fair estimation?
Yes. But I think getting fully clear on why it separates us from the animals, this was Rand's distinct view of free will. I think it's really helpful to get this perspective. If you're asking, what do I have direct choice over? What's my fundamental control, the locus of my self-responsibility? And the typical is people to bring up, well, could you throw this glass in someone's face? Are you going to raise your arm or not? So that, like, why would I start raising my arm all of a sudden? I can do it to prove that I can do it or something. But it's not. But what I have daily, and I mean, it's sort of minute-to-minute control over, she said, is not sort of choices about content. Am I going to throw this water or drink it? Or so? It's choices about, how am I using my mind? Am I really putting effort and exertion into, I'm trying to be present in the world, engaged with the facts, trying to understand. She called it, you have a choice to focus or not. And she meant it what, and this is the issue about why, what separates us from the animals. Animals, like, I mean, the other animals like us, we all have perceptual systems, eyes, ears, so, and your eyes can go out of focus. I don't know if this ever happened to you. I always thought, like in comic books, when they say you've seen stars, when you, that's not really what happened. I was rollerblading once and I wiped out.
And you saw stars.
I've had it happen. And the world's out of focus. Like it's even if you're trying to, it's everything's spinning. So, and you're just not taking in information. Mm-hmm. That's at a perceptual level. She thought at the same when we're using our minds and thinking, we can bring our mind into full focus where we're really paying attention and trying to understand, trying to deal with our lives, the things in our lives. We're taking control, or you can sort of semi take control, or you cannot take control at all. And she called the contrast, so you can choose to focus or you can choose to drift or semi drift. And I think drift's a good word. It's, you're not exerting control. It's sort of, now you're more a spectator in what is going on. The world's passing by. You're not really engaging your mind. Mm. You're drifting. I think when you go to sleep, what you do is, you're trying to let go of your focus and drift, and it, I don't think it's accident, drift off to sleep. Mm-hmm. But when you're not trying to go to sleep, when you're in,
you should be here.
Yes, you should be here, present, thinking. And that's what you have direct control over. And that then opens up all kinds of further choices about, like, what am I going to think about? What, like, what's my day? What do I need to do? All choices about content. But the fundamental is, it's about the processing your mind is engaged in or not engaged in. The effort you're exerting, and like mental effort you're exerting or not exerting.
So it must drive you crazy when we put so much emphasis these days on genes. You know, everyone's obsessed with 23andMe and all of these things. And in, even in one of the commercials, there's this guy who talks about something to the effect of, you know, he thought he was German, so he drank beer. Then he found out, it turns out, he was more this, so now, or he was more Swedish, so now he goes ice fishing, or something like crazy like that.
Yeah.
And I always think it's such a bizarre thing, because you could like both of those things, regardless of whether you're, where your ancestors are from. And it's a little bit of an oversimplification of it.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that a little bit of that from the focus on genes in this way must irk your view of the world.
If my wife were here, she could tell you I hate those commercials. Yeah. So. And it is, yes, because it, what it projects sort of is the content of your character's random. It's, yeah, I love to go eat sausages and drink beer, and all of a sudden I find out I've got some genes, and now I'm going to do something completely different.
Right. I mean, that's really what the commercial's doing. Yeah.
And it's, I, for sure, genetics plays a significant role in life. So I don't want to say it's not all choice. You're choosing, given who you are, in the environment that you're brought up in, and that you make for yourself. So it's, choice is not magic. It's not like you can just choose to do anything at any point in time. So I think a person's genetics do have some role. They have roles about mood. I think they have roles in what people get interested in or not. And all kinds of things about one's physiology, I think, can have effects like that. But if one's pretending that it's only genes and only a person's environment, and you're eliminating choice, that, I think, is that viewpoint. In the end, I think that viewpoint is crazy, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's at the very least, it's sort of a dim way of viewing humanity.
It's a dim way of viewing humanity. It's a dim way of viewing yourself. To view yourself really as I'm just a product of outside forces and that I don't have a fundamental control is, it's an excuse. It's often people use it as an excuse to do anything. Like, I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
That's what, how I was brought up in this environment and I was born with these genes. What do you expect from me?
Yeah.
And there are some things certainly that a person is beyond their control. But this is why the issue is so important, I think, because you have to think, what are the factors really beyond my control? And that it can include that, like, I think levels of intelligence vary. So there's not a choice, am I going to be Albert Einstein or not? There's no such choice.
Right.
But there is a choice, am I going to be a scientist or not? Am I going to try to understand the physical world or not? There's choices like that that anybody can make. Not anybody can become an Einstein. So you really have to think about, like, what are the factors that I don't have control over and what are the factors that I do? And trying to conceptualize free will is about this issue of thinking, yeah, there's some things I have control over, some things I don't, some things I have only indirect control over. So if you're, for instance, if you're a kind of angry person that you're driving in traffic and the other drivers, like you get so, like you fly into a rage about mm-hmm. this thing. I don't think you can just choose to say, no, I'm going to stop doing this. But I think there's things you can do. Like you can think of your, I don't like this about myself. It's not good for me. There's no reason I should be consumed with anger every time I'm driving. And I need to do so. And then think of what are the choices that I can make that maybe 6 months from now, I'm going to be more at ease driving. I mean, maybe it's listening to audiobooks, maybe I'm doing. But that, you do have control over that. So it's really important in life to think, okay, I have no control at all over that. My level of intelligence, I'm not going to be Albert Einstein, no matter how much I try, whatever, I'm not going to get there.
Yeah.
There are some things I have direct control over, and there are some things I have indirect control over. And to chart your life, you have to be thinking about these issues. And if you get it wrong, I think it's a problem.
The Matrix has to be your favorite movie, right?
I like it. I don't think it's my favorite movie, but...
But I mean, this is ultimately, this mm-hmm. is exactly what it's all about choice and
yeah.
that it's on you or on you in this case.
Yeah.
How is this all related to cause and effect? Once you realize that you have free will.
So I think, part of the argument for determinism comes from science. It comes from sort of the thinking of the Newtonian universe, which was described. It's like clockwork. I think it's true.
This happens, then this yeah. happens. This
yeah.
happens, then this
and
happens.
And you can predict, yeah. I mean, if you think of part of what he's doing is understanding the orbits of the planets and so on. You can predict a year from now where Mars is going to be. And they can, and they predict, and he's right. I mean, but there was an extrapolation to that, from that, to everything in the universe is like that. And I don't think that extrapolation makes sense. And even if you think now just sort of about physical science, they don't think that that's how the subatomic world works, mm-hmm. that it's not like this kind of clockwork. It doesn't mean there's not cause and effect in it, but you can't think of it as it's the prior conditions that determine everything like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't think of that in science, in certain realms in physical science. And I think it's right not to think like that, that cause and effect. So there's often an equation that if you believe in cause and effect, you have to believe in a clockwork universe. And I don't think that's true. And so what happens, and you can see this, for instance, in Harris's discussion of free will, but it's not unusual that he views it like this, because this is what happened, that free will is acausal, that it's an exemption from cause and effect. So it's kind of mystical, magical, or supernatural. It's God injects free will into human beings. And if you're going to toss out God and mysticism and the supernatural, you have to toss out free will. I don't think that's right. So you can think of free will as cause and effect, but not antecedent causes uh-huh. of effect. And I think, indeed, the whole conception of free will, like if I take this glass and if I drop it, I'm not going to do it, but if I drop it...
Or are you?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to. At a high enough level, it will shatter.
Mm-hmm.
When you say it, so the effect is it's shattering. It's not just that you dropped it. The fact is, why does it shatter? Because it's made of glass. If it was a steel cup, it wouldn't shatter. So,
mm-hmm.
so cause and effect, it's shattering because it's made of glass, or it bounces because it's made of steel and it just rolls off the table. It's not a temporal notion. It's the cause is the glass, it's made of glass, and it shatters when if you drop it in a high enough height. So the cause and effect, it's not antecedent factor leads to this, to this. I think some systems, like the solar system, do work like that. Others mm-hmm. don't. And so when you're saying that I make a choice, I'm the cause of that choice. I'm the one choosing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different than you choosing. And it's a different action. But what the action is, as I'm selecting between things. So you can't look at it as it's determined by things, but it's still caused. I'm the cause.
Do you view this question as sort of the most fundamental human question? Is there anything that supersedes this in sort of the primacy of what it is to actually be a free-thinking human being?
Yeah, I think it's part of it, of this the basic question. And you asked it before about the difference between other animals. So one way you could put it is that we have choice and they don't. Another way you can put it, and this is... that, I mean, at least since the ancient Greeks, they thought of it as human beings are rational. Mm-hmm. We can think and we can create and we can produce and we can trade. The animals can't do this. Rand's view, which I agree with, is that free will is a part of rationality. They're the same thing looked at from different perspectives. Thinking is a process that works by making repeated choices. And so there's no such thing as deterministic thinking. Mm-hmm. You have to think, like, is that really good evidence for this? Is that a good argument? Let me work through it. And so you're making all kinds of choices when you're reasoning. So the power that human beings have that other animals don't is we're capable of reasoning, we're capable of making choices, but it's really the same thing. And again, if you think of it in terms of we have control over the process our mind goes through, well, the basic process is thinking. It's not the only process, but what we do, hopefully a large part of the time, is thinking. And that you have control over. And this is, I think in the end, the determinist position is incoherent. You can't make sense of it. In philosophy, we would call it the fallacy of self-exclusion. You can look at other people as though they're determined. Mm-hmm. You can't think of yourself as determined. So, and this is, okay.
Can you explain
that? So you can see this in Harris's book, but you can see, I think, in a lot of determinist writing. But Harris's book is very open about this. It's like, I don't know why I think what I think, why I did what I did. So why, if you really have that perspective of, like, I don't know why I'm saying what I'm saying, thinking what I'm thinking, doing what I'm doing. I mean, he gives examples like, I stopped doing martial arts and then I took it up again, but it wasn't because of choices that I made and so on. If you think that, and if you think that for everything, you have to think that for all your, mm-hmm. what you take as knowledge. So why do you think determinism's true? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just was led to this.
There's a good quandary there.
Yeah, and that, I think...
But you would say that his argument, and I've done a whole show on free will with him, which people should definitely watch.
Yeah,
this, so that they know that you're steel-manning his argument to the best of your abilities. But you would argue his argument isn't the pure deterministic one, right? Because he is acknowledging this sort of separate version of... that he acknowledges that all the things before him happened. He's still making the choices, but he still thinks they all divert back.
Yeah, so I
to
think
everything
that's,
before. I think that's a fair.
Yeah, so I think most determinists will say, or at least not maybe most, but many will say, yeah, you make choices, but they're determined mm-hmm. by the prior factor still. And it's just, so they.
Right, so they're not arguing we're robots,
right.
obviously. They're acknowledging, well. Right, I guess it depends how in the weeds you want to get.
Yeah.
But they're acknowledging that we make decisions.
Yes.
It's just where that decision comes from.
Yes, and he's very explicit that we're conscious and you're making choices or decisions. But I think in the end the position really amounts to, yeah, but it's not really a choice. And they will often put it as, it's an illusion of free will.
Right.
So it seems to you like a choice only because you don't know all the antecedent factors that are making you do this rather than that. But I think if you're taking seriously the experience of it as a choice, it's you selecting. It's not you end up doing something. You experience yourself as, I'm selecting this. When you left, you talk in your conversation with Yaron that Yaron was one of, Yaron Brook, yep. a colleague of mine. One of the impetus for you leaving was Young Turks, right?
Or a TV, actually.
And like that was a difficult decision, I would guess for you, you're weighing it, and it's not experienced as, yeah, and then I ended up over here rather than over here. It's you made a decision about it.
Right.
And that's, I'm selecting between these two things.
Right. And so their argument would be that it was all the prior things that happened to me, that it wasn't really a choice that I made at the end of that.
Yeah.
It was just, this was the end conclusion to a sort of obvious run of ideas, let's say.
Yeah.
And your counter to that is, no, that may all well be true that I had a long history of thoughts and ideas and struggles and whatever else, but at the end, I was left with my mind and a choice to make, and I chose that road.
Yeah, and I think it has an explanation. So I think they acknowledge that there's choice, but it's not really choice in the end, I think. And so it's an illusion. But the reason they think it has to be an illusion is they have this perspective from science, I think, that, yeah, but what science shows us that everything is clockwork. So even though it seems like you're making a choice, it has to be an illusion in some deep sense. Because it's not as though people, the neuroscientists or whatever, can predict what people are going to do.
Right.
So it's a perspective of it has to be, and when we eventually discover everything and so on, we'll be able to predict, but we can't predict now. And I think the push that it has to be an illusion because science teaches this, I think that's the mistake. I think it doesn't have to be an illusion. And I think it's not an illusion. And it's not, if you ask, like, what's the cause? It's you choosing. So it's not random. It's not chance. So that's the other. It's either clockwork or it would just be random. Like, and I mean, the there's the modern version of this. In the ancient world, it was the swerve of an atom. It's like, why do you move your arm? Well, the atom swerve. But you're out of control,
yeah.
Right? It's just random
yeah.
stuff happening.
Yeah.
But the idea that you're in control is you're making the choice. And there's an explanation of you're doing it, but there's not an explanation in the sense of, yeah, but what's the prior things that made you do it? No, I don't think there's an explanation for that.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, one that will continue to go on.
Yeah, this is a perennial debate. It is.
The forces before us and after us will continue to push this topic forward.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.